Okay, so last week we were talking about linear systems, linear equations, and then looking at linear systems. So the first sheet that I've got is actually just a copy of the last stuff that you had last week. I'd like to start, if I may, with question 5. We're trying to solve linear systems, and so what that means to us, and we saw in questions 1, 2, and 3 that we have three possible situations we could have with a linear system. We could have a unique solution, as in one ordered pair if we have two equations and two variables, or one ordered set of three numbers, ordered triple, if we have three equations and three variables. So we could have one set of real numbers and satisfy all of the equations in the system. Or we could have infinitely many solutions. So in the case of two variables, what that really means is that you've got two equations that represent the same straight line. So every point that's on one of them is also on the other one. When you get into 3 and 4 and 5 and more variables, it's not quite as easy to describe geometrically, but the concept is exactly the same. You have infinitely many points or infinitely many ordered n couples that satisfy all of the equations in the system. Okay? And then, of course, the third situation is you could have no solution. And those three situations were illustrated by questions 1, 2, and 3 on that sheet, where the first one had a unique solution, the second one there is no solution, and the third one there are infinitely many solutions. All right. Now, the neat thing about this linear equation is it doesn't matter how many equations you have, and how many variables that you have in the equation, there are only those three situations. The system will have either one solution, infinitely many solutions, or no solutions. So I'm going to go through one approach to question 5. We talked last week about the fact that there are basically three things that we're allowed to do, and we're allowed to do them any number of times that we want to. One is sort of trivial in the sense that it doesn't matter which equation I write down first, so I can rearrange them vertically in my list. It doesn't make any difference. So I can move them around. We can multiply any equation by a non-zero constant. We're not allowed to multiply by zero, because that destroys a whole bunch of information. Or we can add multiples of one equation to another. Now, why would we do that? Well, the purpose that we try to do is do it in such a way that we will eliminate or get rid of one of the variables. The way I'm going to do this particular one, I'll label my three equations. And what I'm going to do is try and add them. And since my y's here all have a coefficient 1 or negative 1, I'm going to key on that. So if I add the second equation to the first equation, well, I get x plus x, so I get 2x, and then I get y plus negative y, which is 0y, and I get z plus 2z, or 3z, and I add the numbers together, I get 16. Now, I'm going to do the same sort of thing. I'm going to add equation 2 to equation 3, because again, the negative 1y and the y will add to give 0y, and I'll have gotten rid of one of my variables. So that will give me 4x, and I have minus y plus y gives me 0y, 2z minus, or add negative 3z, or 2 minus 3, negative 1z, and then 13 plus negative 9, 4. Okay. So now I've got something simpler. I can take these two equations, which only have two variables in them, and solve them. And there's a number of ways I can do that. I can do the same sort of thing. I could multiply the first one by 2 and then subtract. I could multiply this one by 3 and then add. Or, from this equation, I can rearrange it. And it tells me that z is equal to 4x minus 4. All right? So all I've done is rearrange this so that I've got z by itself. Now what I'm going to do is take this and substitute it into that one. Right? So all I've done is this one gives me an expression in terms of x for what z is. So
So I'm just going to substitute that into the first one. And now I've got an equation that only has an x in it, no other variables. So simplifying this, I get 2x. Here I get 3 times 4x, which is 12x. So I've got 14x and a negative 12. Okay? So now here we have 14x is equal to 28. So x equals 2. And now we know z in terms of x. So we have that z equals 4. And now we can come back and we can use any one of the three. We've got values for x and z. We put them in and calculate y, and I think I'll use this one. So y equals negative 3. Now, we can easily check that just by substituting, whether we do it by writing it down or whether we just do it in our head, right? We have 2, negative 3, 4. So 2 subtract negative 3, so that would be 2 plus 3, that's 5. Plus 2 times 4 is 8, so that's 13. That works. Right? And similarly, 3 times 2 is 6. Minus 3 is 3. Minus 12 would be negative 9, and that works. That's the nice thing about these things. You can check them quickly. Once you've got an answer, you can go back and check very quickly to see whether it works. Okay? And in a situation like this where you have 3 equations, even if you have more equations, you can use that approach. You can eliminate one variable, and then you get a simpler system of equations, and you solve that, and then go back and put it into the other one. Now, you can do that even if you have a bigger system. 4 equations, 5 equations, with 4, 5, 7 variables, whatever. When you get into solving real-world problems, you tend to get moderate-sized systems. I think it was the Boeing 707 wing when they were looking at developing that many, many years ago. They were looking at a system of approximately 900 equations in 1,000 variables when they were looking at that. So that's a reasonable size. It's not huge, but it's a reasonable size system. Not one that you want to do by hand. Right? But the whole thing is, it didn't matter, the same principles and the same approach work. Now later on, you'll find a way to write this down in a short form rather than writing down all these equations. And it involves something called a matrix.
Question 9, if you take a look at it.
One of the biggest problems that most people have with doing mathematical problem solving is translating from what's written in words into things like we have on the board, equations. So, if a 3-digit number is decreased by 297, the result is the number with the digits reversed. So how do I write that mathematically?
100x plus 10y minus 297 equals 100z plus 10y plus x.
Is that absolutely crystal clear to everybody? It's right, but it's not crystal clear to me because I don't know what x, y, and z are. Not what values they have. I'm not sure what they represent. It's important. That's part of the problem. What is x? What is it supposed to be? The hundredth digit of the number. But it's important that our solutions say that. Because if it doesn't, someone's going to look at that and say, I have no idea where that comes from. Let's simplify this equation. So if we now collect our variables, we have an x over there, so we'll subtract an x from each side. So I get 99x. I have 10y over there, and I have 10y over here. So if I subtract 10y from both sides, 0y, so we won't even write it down. And we've got z here and 100z over there. So if I subtract 100z from both sides, I end up with minus 99z. And just because I like to have my constants over there, I'm going to add 297 to both sides. So that this is equivalent. These are the same thing. What do you notice about that, though? The x and the z both have the same coefficients, and one step further.
Yeah.
99 divides into all the coefficients, so I'm going to divide everything by 99. So this is actually really x minus z equals 3. So that's my first equation. Now we go back to the problem. And we look at the next one. It says 50 times the sum of the digits is 32 less than the number. How do I write that mathematically, given the x, y, and z that we've got?
Okay, so this is the number, 100x plus 10y plus z. 32 less than that would be that thing minus 32. And we're told that 50 times the sum of the digits. So x plus y plus z, those are my digits, so that's the sum. So there's the raw form of my second equation. So let's see if we can simplify that. So if we bring my variables over here and the constant over there, I've got 50x here and 100x there. So when I subtract 100x from both sides, I'll get negative 50x. Subtract 10x, or 10y, sorry.
40y.
Plus 40y, plus 49z equals negative 32. All right, and our third equation, the last statement, says the hundreds digit equals the sum of the other two. So x is equal to y plus z. So there's lots of things that we could do next. So what I'm going to suggest we do is we take either 3 or 1, isolate one of the variables, and substitute it in here. Which one would you like to use? Equation 1 or 3? We're going to substitute into 2 to reduce it to two variables.
Can you just logically assume that y equals 3 if you come here?
Well, here we have x minus z equals y, and over there we have x minus z equals 3. Well, they're the same in the x and the z, right? So that's the kind of thing that's really nice if you notice something like that. What we were about to do is fine. We would have got there. Would have been a little bit of work, but not bad, right? But if we notice that here we've got x minus z equals 3, and from that equation we've got x minus z equals y. It's the same x and z, so that says y has to be 3. Well, this equation becomes exactly the same as that one, but now we can substitute y equals 3 into here, and we can simplify this equation. So we substitute this, and so we get negative 50x plus 40 times 3 plus 49z equals negative 32. So we've got negative 50x plus 49z equals negative 152. So now we've got this, I'll call this 4, and we have x minus z equals 3, 1. Now we want to solve those two. We have two choices, really. We can multiply the second one by 50 and then add it, and the x's will disappear. Or we can multiply the second one by 49 and add them together, and the z's will disappear. So what we're going to do is equation 4 plus 50 times equation 1. So what I'm going to do is multiply this by 50, so I get 50x, and I add it to negative 50x, that gives me 0x. And so I have 49z plus negative 50z, what will that give me? Negative 1z, and I have negative 152 plus 3 times 50 gives me negative 2. So z equals 2, so x minus 2 equals 3, x equals 5. So the original number is 532. Now you can check each one of your equations, or forget about the equations, you can check the words. The three-digit number is decreased by 297. So that says take 532 and subtract 297 from it. What do I get? Right? Which is the number reversed, which is what it's supposed to be according to this. It says if you take 50 times the sum of the digits, well, the sum of the digits is 5 plus 3 plus 2, 10. So 50 times that is 500. And that's supposed to be 32 less than the number. Well, take 32 away from 532, you get 500. And then the last one is the hundreds digit equals the sum of the other two. Well, 2 plus 3 equals 5. Right? So it all works. But what I'd like you to think about now, I'd like you to consider the following. This question was an example of something where if we had found, suppose we had found here that rather than 3, y was equal to 1/3. Would that have made sense? The three variables, x, y, and z, were to be digits in a three-digit number. Our digits that we use are 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. So if we found that y was 1/3, that wouldn't have worked. So that's an example of something called a Diophantine equation. All a Diophantine equation is
is a linear equation like what we've looked at, but the coefficients are integers, but we only want, more importantly, we only want the solutions to be integers. So it might be that it's a question like we just looked at, where it doesn't make sense for the variables to be non-integers, or we might just be looking for only the integer solutions for whatever reason. Okay, so a Diophantine equation, we only want integer solutions.
So let's just think about an example. I'm going to give you a couple of minutes, see if you can find a solution to in integers. So x and y must both be integers. So there's a couple ways we can look at this and argue that there's no solution. One of them is that we can take a common factor of 3 out of the one side. If x and y are both integers, then x plus 2y will be an integer. So now we've got the situation where we want 3 times some integer to equal 5. There's a problem because 5 only has 2 factors, right?
It's 1 in itself. And if you include negative integers, there's 4, right? There is 5, negative 5, 1, and negative 1. Those are the only numbers that divide evenly into 5.
So there's an argument that says there is no solution because I have the product of 2 integers giving me 5, and since the only way that's possible with positive integers is that one of them is 5 and one of them is 1. And we can hopefully make x plus 2y equal to 1 or equal to 5, but we can't make 3 equal to 1 or equal to 5. So there's no solution in integers. So just what was said here was that I'd like to look at taking an integer and given a second integer less than it, expressing one in terms of in this way. And you've done this before, maybe not expressing it exactly this way, but back when you first learned about division and remainders, you did exactly what we're doing here. So the idea is to find Q and R, which are both integers, and if I put more restrictions on it, I want Q to be a positive or a non-negative integer. And if I forgot about this part to begin with, you'd be able to come up with several answers. For example, if I let Q be 0, then R would just be 54. And if I let Q be 1, R would have been 43. And if Q were 2, 32. But in all of those cases, R was bigger than this number. So if I force you to give me Q such that R is in this range, what do I get?
Q equals 4 and R equals 10.
So I could write this in a number of different ways, unless I put the restrictions on where I want this number R, the remainder, to be less than the 11. So if I put this restriction on where I want Q to be non-negative, and I want R to be, again, non-negative, and at most whatever this number is, then that expression is unique. You can only come up with one set, Q and R, that works. So basically what this statement says is that if I give you two integers, A and B, so 54 and 11, that's my A and B, and I require that R be between 0 and B, then there are unique numbers Q and R that fit. That's in fact called the division algorithm, although if you know what the word algorithm means, which is a process to do something, it hardly seems like an algorithm, it's a statement, right? Now, the greatest common divisor. So the greatest common divisor of two integers is the biggest integer, which will divide evenly into both of the numbers. So what's the greatest common divisor of 4 and 24? 4, because 4 will divide into both of them, right? Greatest common divisor of 3 and 51 is 3. All right, let's see if we can get a little harder. So the GCD of 506 and 391. How would you do that? What's one approach?
Factor tree.
A factor tree. So what kind of factors are we looking for ultimately? If we take a factor tree all the way down, what are those final numbers that we get? Prime numbers. Okay, so we could take a factor tree and find all the prime factors, or maybe somewhere along the line we find what we think is the greatest common divisor, but then we have to show that somehow that it is. We could do that, and it wouldn't take that long, but if the numbers got a little bit bigger, like 127,576 and 458,322, You might not want to do a factor tree. So we can actually use that division algorithm to help us find the greatest common divisor. We don't know what this is. We'd like to know what this is. Here's one way to get it. I want to write 506, 391 times Q plus R with the same restrictions that we had before. I want R to be between 0 and 391. So what's Q going to be in this case? It's got to be 1, right? We want Q to be we want this to be a positive number. So if Q is negative, this would have to be huge, and it would be bigger than 391. So if Q is a non-negative number, if it's 0, then R would be 506, too big, right? Because I want 0 to be less than or equal to R, less than 391. That's the restriction that I have, right? So if I do that, I want, this will be 506 equals 391 times 1 with whatever's left. So that's 115, right? So now, for no apparent reason, what I'm going to do is say, all right, now I'm going to take 391 and 115 and write 391, 115 times Q plus R. And of course, these aren't the same Q and R. And now I'm going to do that. And again, now that my restriction on R is that it must be less than 115. So how many times will 115 go into 391?
Three.
Okay, so 391 equals 115 times 3 plus 46, is that right? And now similarly, for the same not apparent reason as before, I'm going to use the 115 and the 46. So now I'm going to say I want 115 to be equal to 46 times Q plus R, where R has to be less than 46. So Q will be 2. Because 3 times 46 would be over 120. So 115 equals 46 times 2 plus 23. And I'm going to keep going. So now I've got the 46 and the 23. So I'm going to say 46 is equal to 23 times Q plus R. And I want here R to be less than 23. When I get a 0 as my remainder, I'm done. And the previous remainder, so in other words, as I go through the process, the last non-zero remainder is my GCD.
It's 23.
Thank you. Right? So somebody over here had already figured it out. It was 23. Okay? Yeah. And he's absolutely right. Now, I'm not going to go through all the theory of why that is, but it has to do with we've preserved the greatest common divisor through all the way that we've gone. So the last non-zero remainder is the GCD of 506 and 391, because that's the numbers I started with. So if I do this, this is something called the Euclidean algorithm. And all it is repeatedly using this division algorithm that we had written up here and saying, let's take the two numbers I was given, write it using the division algorithm. So find my Q and my R that satisfy those conditions. And then I take that number, which was, if I think about the originals as being A and B, that's B, and I take R, the first R, and I write B in terms as a multiple of the remainder from the previous step, plus a new remainder. And I just keep doing that. And when I get to the last non-zero remainder, so I keep going until I get a zero, and then I go back to the previous line, and the remainder there is my GCD. Now, we could prove why that's true, but let's not worry about that. Okay, that's called the Euclidean algorithm. Now, what's the big deal? Now, why is that important to us? Well, number one, it gives us a way to find the GCD of two numbers. And it even works if one of the numbers is negative. In that case, rather than R being less than the B, if B were negative, we'd say absolute value of B. Okay, so we still want R to be a positive number, and that takes care of it very quickly. It gets us into positives. So I'm going to make this relatively straightforward. Find me a solution to that. Well, what we can do is we can actually reverse this. We don't need the last line. So all I've done is rearrange this line from this derivation that we did before. OK?
So 23 is equal to 115 minus 2 times 46, and I've written the multipliers first. So now I look at that and I say, well, that doesn't tell me what I need, because I need something with multipliers 506 and 391. Oh, but 46 from the previous line, 46 is equal to 391 minus 3 times 115. Right? To start with, I took the 23 and wrote it in terms of 46 and 115. And now I, from the previous line, I know that 46 is equal to 391 minus 3 times 115. So I'll substitute that in. And now I'll just simplify this. Not completely. I'm going to leave the 391 as a 391. I'm going to leave the 115s as 115s. So I multiply the negative 2 through, so I get negative 2 times 391, and negative 2 times negative 3 gives me 6 115s, and I've got one out here already. So I've got 7 115s, and I've got negative 2 391s. And now I go back to the next one, and I can write the 115. I've got the 391, that's good. I want a 391, because I've got 391 y's. But this first line then gives me a way to write 115 in terms of 391 and 506. So I've got 7 times, and from the top line over there, 115 is equal to 506 minus 1 times 391. And I still have the negative 2. And so now, if I simplify this, again leaving the 506 and the 391s alone, I have 7 506s, and here I've got negative 7, and another negative 2, so negative 9. And remember that all of this was equal to 23 at the beginning. And so now I have 23 is equal to 7 times 506 minus 9 times 301, or 391. So that says a solution to this. I set x equal to 7. And y equal to negative 9. So the procedure, first we want to find the GCD of the two numbers. So I do that, and in this case the GCD was in fact the constant I had over there. Now suppose that rather than that equation, I asked you for the solution to this. So if I did what I just said, I take these two numbers and I find their GCD. The fact that on over there I have a 92 is not going to change what happens here, right? If I take 506 and 391 and go through this process, I'm going to get exactly that. The 92 doesn't come into it, just like the 23 didn't come into it, right? Because we didn't know the 23 before. But now, I look at this, and I see that, oh, 92, how does that relate to the number 23? Yes, 4 times 23, right? So what I know from what I've done here so far is that if I take x equals 7 and y equals negative 9, I have a solution. So I know that if I put 7 and negative 9 in there, I get 23. If 92 is 4 times 23, and I think it is, what if I were to take 4 times the 7 and 4 times the negative 9 and put them in here, will I get 92? But this is a solution, and that comes from the fact that 92 is 4 times the GCD. And we already know what the GCD is in terms of 506 and 391. All right. So the modification to the statement that somebody gave us before is that if I have an equation of this form, so ax plus by equals c, as long as the GCD, greatest common divisor, of a and b divides c, I have a solution. And if it doesn't, I don't. So it's not that a and b both must divide c. Their GCD must divide c. That's what I mean. Okay. Now, if A and B both divide C, then their GCD will, right? By extension. So the one is stronger than the other, more restrictive. Okay? Okay. So if we have a Diophantine equation, AX plus BY equals C, it has an integer solution, XY, if and only if the GCD of A and B
divide C. If and only if means that if the GCD of A and B divide C, there is a solution. And essentially it means that if it doesn't, there isn't a solution. So that gives you, and this, what we've just done, gives you a way to find a solution.
So this gives
one solution.
If I want all solutions, okay, to get the set of all solutions, we need to find a solution. We've already got a solution, right? The set of all solutions here, so where does the 17 and the 22 come from? I'm just telling you this. If I want all solutions here, I've got a solution, x equals 7, y equals negative 9. I'm claiming that 7 minus 17m and negative 9 plus 22m, where m is any integer you want, is also a solution, and in fact that will give me all solutions. So where does the negative 17 and the 22 come from? Any ideas? Well, I'm going to suggest that they somehow relate to the 506 and the 391. So 391 divided by 23 is 17. And that leads me to suggest that 506 divided by 23 is
22. Where did you get the negative from?
Ah, so where did the positive and negative come from?
Well, let's just think about this for a minute. If I were to just start with 7, negative 9, if I just add 17m to this one and add 22m to this, they're both going to be bigger numbers, right? So if I'm adding now larger multiples of the same two numbers, I'm not going to get 23, right? So as one of the x or y gets bigger, the other one has to get smaller. These multipliers come from that fact, that these are the multipliers of the GCD that give the two numbers. And so I'm adjusting the one. You can check that this is always a solution, no matter what m is. If that always works, then I should be able to take these expressions and put them in there for x and y, and I should get 23, no matter what m is. If this is an accurate statement, then I should be able to take this expression for x and this expression for y and put them in here, forget about the 23, and calculate, and it should give me 23 no matter what m is. Right? So for all integers m, that's true, then it doesn't matter what m is. If I put those two expressions in, I should get 23. We can check that. So 7 minus 17m is my x. And if I put in negative 9, right, what happens? I get 500. I'm not going to multiply 506 by 7. I'm going to leave it like that. Now, if someone would be so kind to tell me what 506 times 17 is, 8,602. And if someone could tell me what 391 times 22 is.
8,602.
Well, isn't that convenient? Here I have negative 8,602m, and over here I have positive 8,602m. So when I add them together, I get 0. So I have 506 times 7 plus 391 times negative 9. And I already know that that solves my equation, so I know that's 23. And it doesn't matter what integer you make out, because it all comes out in the wash. Now, so there you have, I haven't formally told you how you take this and get to this. We can see how these come about. These ones are just the multipliers, and the bottom line is you want one of the numbers x to be getting bigger while the other one's getting smaller.